What are Americans veterans saying about cancel culture, woke politics, and the current effort to tag conservative Christian service members as extremists? Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North is going to tell us. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepard, and this is First Liberty Live. Each day, it seems like I read about another organization or person who's been locked out of social media because of something they said. Would you please do something for me? Go to firstlibertylive.com and look for the big blue subscribe button. It's our way to connect with you directly. You'll get an email every time a new episode comes out. And that way, someone in a cubicle at a big tech company won't come between us and you. We'll be able to connect with you directly. This is part of our series on Military Appreciation Month. Oliver North is a political commentator, best-selling author, former deputy director of the National Security Council, and decorated veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps with a Silver Star and a Purple Heart. Colonel North, it is an honor to have you with us today.
Stuart, great to be with you. And all this is, you know, here we are at the weekend of Memorial Day. You know, I go back to the time when this last day of May, before we did everything on Mondays anyway, but
yeah.
The end of May was always Decoration Day.
I remember that.
And my brothers and I would pile into the back of pickup trucks along with all the Boy Scouts at the VFW post and the American Legion. And we'd go up with little American flags and put one on the gravesite of every veteran in every cemetery in this little town in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And, of course, in 1967, that became Memorial Day. Then it became the first Monday next to when Memorial Day would have been.
Right.
But the fact is, it was all done to honor those who had lost their lives in the service of our countries. And we're talking now, if you're adding them up all the way since 1776, and we're not a warlike people, but for nearly 2.5 centuries, ours has been the only nation on earth willing to consistently send its sons and daughters into harm's way, not for gold or colonial conquests, but to offer others the hope of liberty and to protect our country. And so I just heard an ad, Stuart, as we were coming in.
Yeah.
Just heard an ad. Because this is mattress sale day, right?
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah, okay. So here's my way of taking and twisting that the right way.
Okay.
When you hear an American in uniform say, "I've got your back," that's not the slogan for a mattress company. And that's the kind of people that we're honoring today.
Hey, you grew up in a family with generations of service members. What was it like growing up in the North family back in San Antonio?
Well, I was born in San Antonio. My dad had already left. And I did not know this story when my parents were alive. A few years ago, I was up at Fort Indiantown Gap up in Pennsylvania, and I'm interviewing a brigadier general who's just promoted for Fox News because I'd covered him in one of my 60-some-odd embeds as a heroic colonel in the United States Army.
Yeah.
And he was being promoted. Fox let me go cover it, and he invited us, Griff Jenkins and I, to go to the reception afterwards. And at the reception, there's an older guy with a walker who comes up to me and he says, and I'm old enough to know an old guy, right? He says, "You were born at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, in October of 1943. I said, "Yes, sir, I was. How do you know that?" "I delivered you."
"Oh, wow."
"I said, really?" I said, "And how do you remember the time?" "He said, well, I examined your mother. I was the only OBGYN in the 95th Infantry Division. They left me back here to deliver all the babies that were being born after they shipped out to get ready to invade France."
Wow.
And he said, "I'll tell you something else, sonny. You were sired," and that's the word he used, "sired. You were sired right here at Indiantown Gap." And I said, "Well, how do you know that, sir?" He said, "Well, very simple." He says, "The division came here from Fort Niagara in January. We left here in April to go to Fort Sam Houston. You were born in October. Do the math, son. Do the math." That's what it was like to grow up in my family. My dad was the first hero I ever knew, highly decorated from World War II. My dad and all my uncles and almost every male that I knew growing up had served in either World War II, Korea, or both.
Right.
And I look at that kind of experience, and we still had guys working for the Postal Service who were wounded in World War I.
Right. Right?
And so Oscar Pomeroy was missing his forearm and had this ancient prosthetic device that allowed him, like a hook, you know,
right,
double hook, to be able to pick things up and pull your mail out of his mail bag because he was an employee, a veteran's preference hire by the Postal Service. All those kinds of things have now changed in our country. You know, you're lucky if the postman walks anywhere. He comes with a vehicle or some kind and maybe makes it into the postal box. The bottom line of it is, the one thing that has been consistent for 2.5 centuries is young Americans still, in this case, volunteer, ever since 1973 for sure. But if you go all the way back to 1775, 76, when the revolution is beginning, all of them were volunteers.
Yeah.
When you look at that, the spread of that 2.5 centuries, the American people are still the best about doing that kind of thing. And the best and bravest military on earth has always been ours.
All right, let's turn to what's in the headlines right now. There's a conversation going on in Washington about how to define, and I'm putting in air quotes here, extremism in the military. And when we hear that, we all have our own definition of that, and we think, well, that's a good thing, right? Well, as always in Washington, it comes down to who's making the definition, because they're wanting to include Christian conservatives, people who believe and uphold the Constitution and think it's worth fighting for. They want to put people like you and me in that category of extremism. What would you like to add to that conversation? If you were invited to speak into that, what would you say?
Well, you know, when I first came into the service, I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps Reserve on the 29th of December, 1961. And at the time, the form that you filled out, if I recall correctly, it's Form 84. And it still is. It's got the same number. See, the 802 or 84, 86, whatever it is. It was 4 pages long. And it asked a security question and a loyalty question. And it was this: are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Communist Party? That was the loyalty question.
Yeah.
Now that those loyalty questions are long. There's dozens of them. The actual form is now something like 16 pages long. And the reason they're doing that is they want to, it's not just a matter, are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? It's, are you now an extremist? Are you now a member of any of these organizations? So, for example, they could decide that somebody who's part of Officers Christian Fellowship, I am, they're extremists, because it just happens that many of those who belong, I'm sure most, because most of the people that are part of the officer corps of the military are white. Does that mean just because you're white that you're an extremist? Is that part of this whole remarkable concept of a racist society, a systemic racism in our country? The problem is, if you're going to do that to somebody who belongs to, let's say, the Knights of Columbus, or somebody who's part of the American Legion, or somebody like that, are you also going to do that to a guy who, when he was 15 or 16, went out and got a St. George's Cross tattooed on his arm? Maybe you understood that it was someday going to be used as an icon for the crazies, the hard crazies out there. How could he have known that? Are you going to throw him out of the military because he's a good young man or a young woman nowadays?
Right.
Just because somebody thinks that might be the sign of an extremist? I'm very concerned that we have just wasted 1.5 million man days taking it out from readiness and making our military better prepared to deter war and to fight them and win. And that's the only purposes of having a military, deter war and fight and win, okay? You take 1.5 million man days out for a mandatory period of, quote, education, trying to turn people against one another based on race, on politics, that they're conservative, they're a threat. I mean, I look at that kind of thing issued by the Secretary of Defense, ordering every unit in the military. Why did it pick 1.5? There are 1.5 million military personnel and civilian leaders in our armed forces. You know, almost every military base is run by civilians.
Right.
All of them, to include everybody in the armed forces, soldier, sailor, airman, guardsman, marine, has now had to have that, quote, mandatory training. That's plain nuts.
You co-authored a book that just came out this month, and it brings the voices of veterans into the national conversation. It's got a provocative title. It's called We Didn't Fight for Socialism, Americans Veterans Speak Up. What are veterans saying to you about where we are right now as a nation?
Well, Veterans Lament, and the one you just mentioned is the next one, but the Veterans Lament book that just came out is 500 American heroes, right? Mm-hmm. These are guys and gals who served our armed country in uniform. And we asked them questions about what is it that gives you a second thought about wanting, let's say, your son or your daughter to serve. You're asking the question, is this the America our heroes fought for? And the 500 responded very much along the lines of the Bill of Rights, socialism, Second Amendment abridging and restricting, rewriting history, secular humanism, political correctness, the anti-Christian media, and that's a very important part of what they're trying to do, censorship, the whole idea of the cancel culture, yeah, systemic racism, and the disrespect you see for our flag. I mean, I've got 6 hours of my weekend back because I don't watch football anymore. I'm sick and tired of watching that stuff.
Yeah.
The flags that I've seen people kneel before, the flags I've seen honored are over the, by the way, the proper term isn't casket. It's a transfer case, that metal box which holds the body of a fallen hero. And that, I have no problem kneeling before that. I have a real problem with watching a football game or a sporting contest of any kind start that way. So I've got a lot of time back on my Sundays.
First Liberty Institute is a nonprofit law firm that exclusively does religious freedom cases. That's what we're all about. When you look at the history of socialism around the world, what impact has it had on religious freedom? How do you see those two hitting up against each other?
Well, they confront one another. I mean, the idea of Christian, first of all, Christian socialism is not a term that I actually can put together. There are Christians in socialist countries who usually pick up and flee. I've seen it happen all over the Middle East. I've seen it happen in Venezuela, who are predominantly Roman Catholic, and they're fleeing what's happened in their socialist country because they're now basically given the back of the hand at best. In some cases, just they disappear. And that's the kind of thing that's happened with socialism all over the planet. What this whole systemic racism thing is about, and this is this whole idea that you're going to teach this in schools. Marxism failed. You see, the Marxist argument has always been turning people against each other based on their economic status. Well, they've seen that fail. It failed in the Soviet Union. It failed all over Eastern Europe. It failed in Cuba. It's failed to divide people by class because everybody's been reduced to the lowest common denominator. And so what they've done is they've very carefully twisted Marxism. So instead of you're going to divide people by race, excuse me, by economic status,
right,
you're now going to divide them by race. And that's what's being taught to our kids in school. This whole idea of systemic racism, Stuart, it's trying to take people and divide us against one another based on the color of our skin, not the content of our character. I mean, let's go back to the days when I remember the civil rights argument advanced by very brave people in many cases. I'm going to sit anywhere I want on a bus. I'm going to vote. I'm going to educate my kid in a segregated school. All of that's being flipped on its head today. Dr. Martin Luther King was the one who coined that expression. We ought to judge people based on the content of their character and not on the color of their skin. What this whole thing of systemic racism is designed to do is to teach our kids, mom and dad are the kind of people they are. They're either oppressors if they're light-skinned or they are the oppressed if they're dark.
You co-founded Freedom Alliance in 1990, just over 30 years ago. Your organization gives out an annual Defender of Freedom Award, and you gave one to one of our clients. His name is Chaplain Westmotter. That was just 5 years ago. We're currently defending an Army chaplain named Andrew Calvert, who's facing a career-ending punishment. Why? Because he expressed his opinion, his religious beliefs about transgenderism on his personal Facebook page. The Army says he's guilty of discrimination and suspended him. What do you see as the proper balance between life in the military and the freedom for a chaplain to express a faith-based opinion on a current issue?
The very first Bible study I was part of occurred when I was as a real formal Bible study, when I was a student in Newport, Rhode Island, in 1980 to 81. And it's from there that I got assigned to the White House. Good thing I came to know the Lord because I needed it twice. In the aftermath for sure.
Yeah.
In our military, the chaplain is supposed to be able to have the freedom to speak from the good book. In my experience, chaplains who preach the word of God, okay, and that's what's in the Bible, the word of God is there. If they preach that, people will come. It's like the field of dreams, right?
Mm-hmm.
You build it, they will come. You preach the word of God, they will come. The idea that a command can say to somebody, that chaplain is wrong for preaching the word of God, I beg to differ. What you guys are doing is defending those who have done exactly that, which is what they should do. Doesn't mean it's going to turn out necessarily the way it should. As you and I both know, sometimes there is injustice in the justice system. But the bottom line of it is, the morally proper thing to do is have a chaplain speak the word of God. And that's what both those chaplains were doing, doing Bill Mulder. And I look at those kinds of things and I say to myself, this is sickening. But that's the kind of leadership that we've got at the top of the pyramid today. You know, most of the senior flag officers in the armed forces today were picked by Obama. And those are the kinds of people who, quote, were screened to be politically correct. It's wrong.
Describe for us how important your faith was to you, both in uniform and during those troubling days during your tenure at the White House. How did faith sustain you through all of that?
Well, it's the beginning and the end of everything. Look, I'm married to the only American woman who had to flee with her children from their home since the Civil War because of what her husband had done for his country. Okay, I put my family through hell. And I look at those kinds of experiences and say, the only thing that protected them while I was gone for so much of my life as a husband, as a father, was coming to know the Lord themselves. So my faith is a very, very big part of what I do every day. I got, at my point, and I mean this, Stuart, my span of influence, at one point I was pretty sure I was going to be commandant of the Marine Corps. People used to tell me that every day. I'm now 77, I'll be 78 in a few months. I look at it, my span of influence is 18 grandkids, right? So at various points every day, I try to find something that will connect them with the word of the Lord. And so, I mean, we're going through a challenging time. My wife is not as healthy as she once was, and we're looking for answers, and we've been up to the Mayo Clinic, and they're very helpful. We're looking around for maybe a solution to her malady. And so the kids are saying, well, okay, what's wrong with Nan? So I don't know the full parameters of it. Maybe we never will. But the bottom line of it is, and this is the Marine Infantry translation, the MIV version.
Yeah.
Right? Romans 8:28. All things work together for good for those who trust the Lord.
Yeah.
And it's going to work out. And so, yeah, we're disappointed that she's not like she used to be, and she's maybe never will be. Maybe I'll drop dead when I walk down the porch steps. You know, those are the kinds of things that I know where I'm going, and I know why I'm going there. It has nothing to do with all the medals that I got and all that stuff, or how good a husband and father I've been. And in fact, if that were the measuring stick, when I got to the gate and they're saying, throw this SOB into hell, Jesus Christ is going to say, no, I would that those who are mine be with me where I am for my greater glory, right? John's gospel.
Yep.
And I look at that, I'm counting on it. He's going to say, he not only knows my name, I know his name. And he's been a follower of mine since he was 35.
Let's talk about those 18 grandkids. It's my understanding, and I assume you're still doing this, that you give each of your grandchildren three gifts, three very specific gifts, and some directions to go with them. Lay that out for us. What's that all about?
I may be breaking the law, so I may be confessing to a crime here, which I'm not sure where Virginia's going with this thing.
Yeah.
But on the 14th birthday, I give them a long box. And on the box is a note that says, if you learn to use everything in this box, you'll never go hungry, you'll never be lost, and you need fear nothing, but you have to learn how to use all of them, and I will show you how. I'm not going to put up a PowerPoint, you know, or like the Boy Scout manual, how to tie a knot.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you how to do it. And I open the book and open the box, and there is the Holy Bible. It's called the Marine Infantry version of the Bible, the translation. It was actually done by Broadman Holman years ago, when I was working for them as an author.
Huh.
And there's a reading about where I came from and why I know the Lord. I open that Bible, it just happens. I don't believe in coincidence. And I know you don't either, right?
Right.
The Lord knows exactly where we are and exactly what we're gonna do about things. So I open to Proverbs. Just happens that there are 31 days in 7 of the months of the year. There are 31 Proverbs. I tell the guy, so today's the 23rd or whatever it is, and you start on 23 and start, go all the way back, and when you get back to 22, come and give me a book report. And by the way, spend a little bit of extra time on 31, because 11 of the grandkids are boys, so them are girls.
Yeah.
I have a Proverbs 31 wife. for those of you listening to Stuart and me talk, go get Proverbs 31 out and read it to your wife just before bedtime, and you too could end up with 18 grand.
It's good to be married to one of those. I can affirm that.
Exactly. And so the first thing is the Bible. That takes you about a month to get through it. Okay, come back, and I'll show you how to use the map and the compass, the second thing that they come to. And the map sheet is Betsy's farm that I married 53 years ago. And it's from the Appalachian Trails, which is the backyard, and the Shenandoah River, which is the front yard. And it just happens, I'll show you how to use this Wenzata compass and navigate on the terrain that's on the map sheet. And the third thing, of course, is a 20-gauge shotgun. It's a Model 870. It's a great shotgun for teaching young kids. Unfortunately, the big boys grow out of it real quick, so I'm going to get some longer guns. But it's a shotgun. And I say, I'm going to show you how to take it apart, put it back together, so you can do it blindfold. I'm going to show you how to clean it. I'm going to show you how to shoot it. And then I'm going to take you out and show you how to hunt with it. And I'm a wing hunter. And so that's the kind of thing that puts you, I mean, it builds memories, tradition in our family, the kinds of which they'll pass on to their kids. And that's, you know, we do silly little things like, even if we're out at Chick-fil-A, okay, we got the whole crowd and now we go to restaurants again.
Yeah.
We just did this a couple of nights ago. And before we do our break into the chow, everybody joins hands and we bow our heads. Whether it's Chick-fil-A or Magnolia's or whether it's McDonald's, that's what we do. It's part of the glue that builds a family. And you know, we range in college age down to diapers, okay, in the 18 grandkids.
I bet.
And they get to see all that day in and day out.
Very good. That's a beautiful picture. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else you want to share before I let you go? I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
There's two things. I want everybody to remember that the words Semper Fidelis are more than a motto for the United States Marine Corps, and that always faithful is a way of life. And the second most important thing, don't forget every day to pray for our country. We need it. Satan is alive and well. I don't want to be political about it, but I think there's a lot of folks who are greater respecters of her, of him and her, or whatever gender Satan is at this point. But that's where that idea has sprung from, that whole idea. And that's why chaplains ought to be able to read what the good Lord says about it. I don't think the good Lord makes mistakes about who you are. That's it, buddy.
Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, great chatting with you. Thank you for making time for us today, and thank you for your service.
Very good. God bless you, brother. Thank you for what you do.
You just heard us talking about Army Chaplain Major Andrew Calvert. If you would like to stand with him, and along with all the other chaplains that First Liberty has taken a stand for, you can sign our letter of support for chaplains. It's on our website. There's a link below this video, if you look in the text, where you can sign off on that. There's also a place where you can include your own personal note of encouragement and affirmation for chaplains. We also want you to keep an eye out this weekend for a special Memorial Day episode. We went to Colorado to see a veterans memorial that's under challenge. And then next Thursday, we'll hear from someone who grew up in communist China, the other side of the world geographically and politically, and that is a very interesting conversation. She will tell us firsthand what happens when government runs everything in your life. We'll see you next time right here on First Liberty Live.